You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome in for another edition on the tee with Anita Marks, John Mascari, head pro at Alpine Country Club, because that's how I like to say it, and Christina Thompson from Golf for Her join me each and every week. Well, that is kind of a lie, guys. We didn't have a podcast. But how funny, like, we've gotten to the point where now it's like, oh, it's only the safe way. So we won't do a podcast this week because it's not a major. It's not a big. So we're going to skip our podcast. So anyway, I mean, that's kind of how we're rolling these days. I don't know if it's anything to brag about, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Christine. I was going to say, I'm sure seeing things differently about the Safeway Open.
Well, we're going to dive into that. Obviously, this podcast is, we're going to really dive into the U.S. Open, and it's happening here in our own backyard at Wingfoot, and we've got some very special guests who's going to be joining us. Lily Broswell is going to join us. She's the director of club operations at Wingfoot and also one of my favorite caddies on the planet, and he's one of the best caddies out there at Wingfoot, and I teed up with him every now and then. In fact, I'm playing Spook Walk with him on Friday, and that's Sean Houlihan, a.k.a. Hooli. And I've played Wingfoot maybe about 5 times, and every time I've played, he's been my caddy. So I thought it'd be great we get a caddy on to really dive into what's going on at the course right now. So I'm really excited about this podcast. But first and foremost, let's look back before we look forward, because we have not done a podcast since the Tour Championship. And Dustin Johnson is just playing ridiculous golf, like out of his mind. I know he was voted Player of the Year, 3 wins with the regular tournament, and then 2 during the FedEx Cup, 4 weeks that were taking place, and obviously number 1 in the world. This really has to be, and John, let's start with you. When was the last time can you remember that a PGA Tour player has been this dominant since, let's say, obviously Tiger Woods.
Yeah, super easy. Like, Tiger going through his mid-2000s.
But I mean, it's been that long.
Right.
It's been that
fair
long.
Point. He's probably just finishing up counting his $15 million from the Tour Championship. So
you don't think he's got one of those machines?
He's just putting stacks of money, and his wife is putting the. Do you think he uses like the broccoli rubber bands? I was always a big fan of the broccoli rubber bands for the cash. Anyway, I'm sure
Christine and I have no idea what you're talking about, John Mascari. So just move on.
I am from Staten Island, so I know that. Anyway, it's so impressive. And you know, we talk about his dominance through the FedEx Cup playoffs. What an amazing season. 21 under par in the tournament, and sure as hell looking like the favorite coming into Wingfoot. But I know there's a few guys in the field that have something else in mind, so I know we're going to touch on that a little bit later. But, boy, just dominance. And the most impressive thing about Dustin is we can go back a few podcasts before. Remember where he shot a couple of 80s. Think about that, in tournament play, and then now he is the most dominant player in the world at this moment. So, Anita, just when you think you have a bad day on the golf course, you come back and you shoot 65.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm going to compare my game, right? But I know we're comparing apples and oranges, and the reason that I'm going to
we're comparing apples and Volkswagens.
Yeah, I know. Okay, stop busting boobs. We're only a few minutes into the podcast, dude.
I need my fix. It's been too long.
My whole point is that even if you're just, you know, an average golfer, right? Like with a, you know, I'm about a 12 handicap right now, right? So if you're an average golfer, I think you can relate, right? You're not a +2 or +5 or plus whatever DJ would be if he was to play with us and how many shots we would get off him. But I think we can all relate, right, Christina? We're like, for 2 weeks, you just, you know, you're shooting in the 90s. Your driver's not working. Your irons aren't on point. Your putter isn't cooperating. And then all of a sudden, you stumble upon a week or two where it just all magically comes together. And you could sit back and you could assume all the reasons why. But that's to me, John, and the point I'm making here is like, that's the beautiful thing about golf, is that it is you have to respect the sport so much because it's so difficult. And any given week, you could lose it. You could lose that feel. You could lose that vibe. You could lose that groove. And you could shoot in your eight in the 80s for DJ. For us, we're shooting in the 90s. Right. But then the next week, you come back and you find it again. That's what I love about the sport so much.
But his shooting those high scores is so much different. Because as you said, let's say he's a plus six or plus seven. He's going to shoot 65, 66, 67, 63. To then go shoot 81, that's like if you're a concert pianist and you all of a sudden sit down at the piano and have no idea where to put your hands. I mean, that would rock my world if that were him. But kudos to him where he just kind of let it kind of shrug off his shoulders and went back to work. And it was almost like a wake-up call for him. And he has woken up, let me tell you.
He is woke.
Oh, is that it? You're just going to drop the mic and exit stage left with that?
Christina Thompson, she brings so much to the show.
Hey, Christina, thank you so much for joining us.
Try the veal, everybody. We'll see you later.
With that significant statement, before we have a very special guest who's going to be joining us. Before we bring her on, guys, and Christina, I'll go to you. Did you watch? We're so spoiled, right? Like, I didn't even watch the Safeway. I didn't watch it.
I didn't watch it either. I feel bad. Yeah, a lot of clout there. And yeah, I skipped this one. I feel bad. It's not that like it was like, it's not like the, it's like the redhead stepchild right now in this tournament. I mean, it's one of those things where you're just like, okay, the season we're starting. This is the next tournament. It's a great location. It's a great, venue, but I don't know. I couldn't get into it.
But Stuart Sink, he won it at 47. Anything that you saw, John, this past week in the Safeway?
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that this event is being kind of put on the back burner. You remember the last time Stuart Sink won?
But don't you think it always is?
But this is a really good story. Like, seriously.
No, I can't remember. I can't remember the last time Stuart Sink won anything.
2009 British Open. He beat Tom Watson. Come on.
Right.
Is this microphone on? Is this thing on?
Oh, man.
No, it's great. 7 years old. He gets
47.
A win.
His son
awesome.
Is on the bag. His awesome. Wife, who is great. A cancer survivor. I mean, this is like really
his
good.
His son was on the bag?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Maybe if you watched.
Yeah, maybe if I watched.
No, that's awesome. But I'll be honest, I didn't realize he was only 47. Is that wrong? I'm sorry.
Did you just say only 47? Okay, we're moving on. All right. Well, on to bigger and better, and that is the U.S. Open. Again, that's being held right here in our own backyard at Wingfoot. And Lily Broswell is joining us. She's the director of club operations. Lily, welcome into our On the Tee podcast. It's a pleasure having you on this evening.
Well, thank you for having me, guys. I'm thrilled to be here.
First things first. Let's start off with, if you can, like, share with our listeners, what exactly is it that you do at Wingfoot?
I like to call myself the one that puts out the little fires everywhere. Sounds like an HBO show, but it's not really. So I'm a little bit all over the place. I was originally hired to do food and beverage and take care of the clubhouse. But I am doing a lot more golf operations. And when the US Open came to our backyard, my boss, who's been terrific, said, this is your baby, so go for it. So here we are, almost 2.5 years later since the USGA came into the property the first time, and it's happening. We're very excited that after everything that has happened in 2020, the US Open is finally here. The players are all registered. There's no player badges left on that display case. So we are very excited that we're just a day away from day one.
I don't know if you guys heard that. She kind of just pushed it aside, like 2.5 years
that you've been 2.5 years. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I know, like, think about like what goes into this event. Yeah, she said planning so far in advance. You've been involved with the USGA, not only planning for it, but planning for an event that was supposed to happen in June it's so easy for you to say, yeah, you know, we just kind of pivot, but like, this is a major, this is in New York.
Yeah.
What has been like some of the biggest challenges that you've had to kind of step up your game to make happen coming into this weekend?
Well, I think, you know, for those that don't know, Mamaroneck is just a few miles away from New Rochelle, which was the epicenter of coronavirus back in March. So for the longest time, it was up in the air. And, you know, although nobody wanted to say it out loud, it was like, well, is this really going to happen? Are we actually... We have a golf course, we have the USGA, but are the players going to feel comfortable coming to New York? And that was the biggest question mark. With no players, there's no US Open. So we're very grateful that the USGA and the PGA of America and their tour protocols have been passed along. It's been a crazy year. The second biggest hurdle that we had is like, what happens if there's not a day open? You know, because there's something going on every weekend, and the moment... the Open was canceled, that was when everybody was like, oh my God, here's our chance. Let's jump into it and let's try to bring sports back, you know, to the world. That's something that I was missing for so long this spring, you know, there was nothing live. And to bring it back to New York and trying to bring the community of New Rochelle and surrounding areas back to the spotlight and try to, you know, we're in New York tough, we're in New York strong. You probably see my pin right here. We love New York, so we want to bring it back. And we're coming back with a bang, baby. This is going to be a good one.
Well, if you can, you know, again, share with our listeners, like, you know, so preparing for this as long as you have, you know, kind of give us the checklist of all the things that you have had to make sure are going to go off smoothly.
So first off, we had all the plans ready, right, for 40,000 fans and vendors and ready by, I'm going to say, January, February. We had a site plan. We had locations. We had transportation. We have logistics of transportation. We had remote parking. We had, you name it, the list is, you know, pages and pages long. And then March comes and all those plans go into trash. And you have to pivot and do it all over again. And then you're doing it with all these question marks and like, well, we don't know. We don't know if we, I almost felt that every time I send an email saying, this is what we're going to do, an hour later, I'd have to retract this, saying, no, we're not doing that anymore. That's not feasible. So the list is, there's too many things to even mention, but the logistics, especially now with all the COVID protocols, have been absolutely insane. Trying to get, you know, the players and the staff and the media to follow all these guidelines that we're supposed to be following to keep everybody safe has been, you know, a huge challenge, but at the same time, I'm very grateful that mostly everybody is following it. So it's been a little nutty of a year, but here we are.
Are you disappointed, Lily, that there's not going to be any fans there, or do you feel that, you know, because of, you know, all the protocols and everything, that it's going to make this tournament safer and a little bit more and a little bit easier on your part not having the fans there?
Well, like everybody, and especially our director of golf courses, you know, we're terribly disappointing that there's no fans here. We want fans here. We want them to see what, you know, what Wingfoot is all about. And not having them here is terribly sad. But at the same time, we feel that with such, you know, with only 2,000 people on campus or on grounds every day between players, caddies, support staff, and media, we feel like the TV broadcast is going to be amazing. You know, there's no grandstands, there's no fans walking around. So you're going to see pure Wingfoot golf course. And if you see anything that the Golf Channel put out today, you see a lot of golf course and it's pretty sweet, let me tell you.
Christina, you have a question?
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, it's so much, like you said, goes into an event like the event. I mean, this is, you know, not just any PGA event. I mean, this is, all eyes are on Wingfoot. So, you know, how will the TV broadcast be? I mean, there's going to be a lot of, I don't know, again, I don't know if this is a question you can answer, but, you know, what are we going to see? I mean, are we going to see more of, like you said, more of the course? I mean, is there any special things that are planned for the spectators, for TV spectators to really, you know, feel like we're a part of that? Because I know a lot of us are bummed that we can't be there. So, you know, anything special to expect?
I know. And I think NBC has done a great job in trying to capture the essence of Wingfoot even before the Open. They've been, I think today I saw some broadcast about, you know, the interior of the clubhouse and things that, and I know they did a great piece in actually the town of Mamaroneck, which was fantastic. But I think you're going to see a lot more pure golf. I think with first off, also let me just sit on for a little bit for a minute. I think you're going to have a lot more balls that are going to be very hard to spot without fans. You're going to have ball spotters there, but you're going to have any fans to say, "Hey, that went behind that rope," and everybody like breaking away. And when I tell you the rough is rough these days, the rough is really rough. So I think that's going to be interesting to see. And I also think that you're going to see more pristine golf course. You're not going to see the grandstands. Anita, you've been at Wingfoot before, and I'm sure you guys have been as well. If you see the east course and west course there, they kind of intermingle. They're not two completely separate courses, like, for example, at Olympic. So you're going to be seeing a lot of like depth on how, you know, if you go and you'll find this interesting, they actually have fenced off certain parts of the east course here at Wingfoot. So, because the players have figured out if they, in certain holes, if they hit it over to the east course and then they cross over, they would actually have a better shot of lowering their score. So that's kind of like, yeah.
That's crazy.
It's kind of fun to see. And I'm like, I asked, why did you put a fence there? It's like, well, it's out. If they shoot it over, hit it over the fence, they're out of bounds. So then that's it. Yeah. Then they have to, you know, so it's going to be different. I think, and we're thrilled to have NBC of our partners back. And I think the golf course is really going to show itself. And talking to a few of the players today, they're very happy. I think Justin Thomas said it the best, you know, it's pure. It's like right in front of you. Like there's, it's hard, but I forget what he said, something along the lines. It's difficult, but it's fun, a different kind of fun. So I'm so curious to see what he means about a different kind of fun.
John, any last question before we let go?
No, well, you kind of mentioned, Lily, the ball spotters briefly before, and this might be a funny question, but how is the USGA handling volunteers on the golf course through
this? So this is actually part of so USGA and Wingfoot worked very, really hard on presenting a plan to the governor's office, because that was the biggest hurdle that we have, right? The governor had to give the blessing on us having this championship. And the way we handle the volunteers is like, as you know, volunteers for major championships fly from all over the world, all over the country. And that's a huge hurdle, you know, with COVID testing and all. So what the USGA decided to do was to offer Wingfoot members the opportunity to be the few volunteers that are going to be here. And they signed up for it. There was an X amount number of spots and members applied for them, and they all went through the safety protocols. They all had to be COVID tested. They all have, you know, to be very careful before, you know, the 2 weeks leading to the event. So we have around 400 volunteers, all of them members. Wow. That are going to be assisting us. And the great thing is, you know, so they're all locals. They're all from New York. Nobody's traveling. It's a little bit easier to control than if you were having, you know, people coming from all over the country.
Great stuff, Lily. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate your time and your insight and appreciate you. And enjoy the next few days.
Thank you. And please say hi to Sean for me. I won't see him for a couple of weeks. So I'm sure he has a lot of inside the robes information about the West course. So
absolutely.
Great guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lily, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You got it.
Take care.
Man, what an exciting job, guys. Right? I mean, you know, to plan such a prestigious, amazing event, like a major. She mentioned Sean Houlihan, who's actually just joined the podcast. I'm going to bring him in right now. So his nickname is Hooli, and Hooli, are you there? I want to make sure we have you unmuted.
No.
I don't know. I don't know if you've got to get unmuted. Hold on.
There we go.
I want to talk to a. I like the nickname.
So I, you know, Christina, I was trying to think. So and let me just again. So Sean Houlihan is joining us, aka Hooli. Huli, how long have you been a caddy at Wingfoot?
It's 1985.
Oh my gosh. So
I just started.
Wow.
So we met through a mutual friend here in Hoboken, and so Huli and I have played golf several times together. Christine, I was trying to think, have you ever played, because Huli and I used to play over at Blue Hill all the time. Are you sure you never teed it up with us?
With you guys? No, I don't believe so. Mm-mm. And I definitely have not been invited to Wingfoot, so I know that for a fact.
Okay. All right. So
there's some sour grapes over here, I'm just going to say.
I'm not a member. Sorry, Christina.
So I always, it's so funny. I played golf with a guy. Never. I played golf with a guy yesterday who's a caddy at Canoebrook. I love playing golf with caddies. I have the best time.
Of course.
I have the best time, and I have the best time playing golf with you, Huli, and myself and John and Christina. We're so thrilled that you're taking the time to join us on the podcast, because who knows this course better than you? Nobody, right?
I've been around it a few times. It's going to be a tough golf course, and they've got it in great shape.
All right, so let's start. First and foremost, this course is known to be extremely long. So with that being said, and I know you're an avid fan of the PGA Tour, who are some of the guys that you think coming in have the distance off the tee to really do well here?
There's a couple of different guys. My thing is this, is it's about 30 guys, honestly, that I think that can win, and it's all the guys that can hit it about 310, 320. If you can hit it that far, you kind of get it past the trouble that they've made. They put a lot of bunkers out there, and they brought bunkers closer to the fairway to tighten up the landing areas. But guys like John Rahm and Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, all those guys can kind of fly it over the stuff that they've made. And there's a couple of holes. The majority of the holes that are doglegs that go right to left. So if you can hit a draw and you hit it far, it's going to help you out considerably at that place. The guys that can hit a draw and not actually, it's not their natural ball shape, I think it's going to kind of, you got to hit it so frequently, unless they can really get it going, a good rhythm hitting that draw constantly, I think that's going to mess them up. Like for a stretch anywhere where you start overcooking them a little bit or you start hitting them straight. But the guys that hit a natural draw, I think have a considerable advantage over everybody else, especially the guys that can hit it deep.
Huli, from the looks of it, and at 7,500 yards, it's pretty easy to say the golf course is going to be difficult. What in your mind is a hole that could be a game changer on Sunday? Or maybe there's like a particular hole that the players have highlighted in their head. Like, let's kind of be careful on this hole or this stretch of holes.
1, 2, and 3 are very difficult. The first three starting holes, it's not a nice welcoming to that course, because the first green is treacherous. The big thing I think is what's going to be is 6 through 12 are not. That's the course where you really got to get it. If you can get a couple of birdies in that little stretch through there, if there is a soft spot on the golf course, that little stretch right there, you can make birdies there. Once you get past 12, 13 is a 210 yard par 3. It's got a somewhat narrow green to it. It's long, but it's not exactly the widest one, especially when it's going to be catching a 210-yard tee shot. 14 is very difficult. It's dogleg left again. That has got a bunker left and right in the landing area. That the big guys can get it over it. They got to get that one over that and be accurate as well. The rough is very, very deep and thick. And 15, 16, 17, and 18, there's no easy spots back there. Once you get past 12, you got to tighten up the shoelaces and hit it straight, hit it hard, and they're very difficult greens back there.
Wow. Like I said, I played yesterday with a caddy from Canoebrook. He was telling me that the rough is, apparently they trimmed it yesterday or the day before yesterday, but they're anticipating it to be 5 or 6 inches come Thursday. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was told that it's going to be 3 for the first 6 feet, then they're going to go to 4 for another 6 feet, and then they're going to go to 5. But they've grown it out, and then you guys know from just mowing your lawn, you grow it really, really high, and then once you cut it, the base is very thick. it's thick, it's lush, it stands straight up. They switched the rough for the 06 Open, and they put just Kentucky Blue and Rye in there. It was no bent. They tried to get the Poana out of it. It's kind of crept back in, but for the majority of the rough is bent and is Kentucky Blue and Rye, which stands straight up in the air, but it doesn't support the weight of the ball. So it's like a rope. It's flexible as heck, but you can't really pull it. So this is the same kind of deal in that it's going to stand straight up, but you can't get a club through it. It's difficult.
I would cry. I would absolutely cry on the golf course. Like, I would be bawling. It would be ugly crying. It would be such a disaster. It would just, I'd become my own gif with the tears coming out of my face, knowing that my ball went in there. Like, I'm just,
way that you can actually
I'm being
get
dramatic.
This ball out of it. It is, it's difficult. It really is. But there is an actual, if you kind of hit, try and hit a cut shot, you put the ball back in your stance a little bit, come down across the ball from outside in, and just come steep at it outside in, and it's shallow out at the bottom. The ball comes out. It doesn't look very good, but it comes out low and it runs, but you can at least get the ball out of the grass.
Hooli, could you just say that again? Because Anita was writing it down. I'm just kidding.
Hooli, talk about the greens. I'm hearing that they're running at like 14s right now. Is that true?
Yes. They're going to have them at 13.5 in the morning, which is probably going to slow down to about 12.5 for the afternoon guys. The only issue with putting them that fast, in 06, they had the greens a lot slower. They had them, they cut them at 11 in the morning. And then they had them down to about 10.5 in the afternoon, which is extremely slow for a U.S. Open. But on that golf course, the undulation is so great on most of the greens that if you have it that fast, you can't really use the difficult spots. But in 06, being that they were so slow, they could give them the really, really, really difficult spots and tricky spots on the green. So now that they're going to have them at 13.5, you kind of got to give them – listen to me. No spot on any one of these greens are easy, but you kind of giving them areas where you don't have to get quite so close to the hole to have a legit birdie putt.
Anita, let me just kind of piggyback what Hooli was saying there. And you've played Alpine before, which is another Tillinghast golf course, same designer. Our greens are usually around 11.5, maybe 12 on club championship weekend. 13.5 and 14 is ridiculously fast, and you know how fast the greens are Alpine. I've played Wingfoot. There are some spots I'll never forget. On number 13, is that the par 3, Hooli? Long par 3. I hit it
13,
left.
Yes, 13.
I hit it left of the green. I couldn't keep the ball on the green.
No,
it was impossible. And I hit like I thought what I thought was a great shot. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This it's gone. So I expect a lot of that.
Christine, if I could just tell you something, this golf course, it is going to be a very, very difficult test. The one word that I would definitely say that Wingfoot is from the first tee to the 18th green is fair. It is going to be, it's an unbelievable design. You've got to get out there one of these days. But that being said,
I'm dropping the hand right now.
100% right. If you hit a bunker shot, there's a cross bunker on the first hole. And I've seen when these greens get quick, somebody tried to play it to the back left corner of the first green, just a little bit of spin, and the thing came right off the front of the green. So it's very difficult. But if you play the golf course the way it's laid out and the way you're supposed to, hit it in the fairway, don't try and get too cute, don't short side yourself, you can actually put a pretty good number at it. It's very fair.
So then let me ask you a question. What do you think is going to win? Do you think with the ridiculous, like, you know, grass and the rough and these slick greens, are you thinking like 5 over is going to win this, 8 over is going to win this? Like, what is the USGA like hoping to have as like the winning number, you know?
I think the USGA is going to be looking like they do every year, is about even. I think the membership is looking for about 15 over par. Steve Rabbit, the head superintendent there, has done an insane job with the place, and you're going to see. It's especially on TV, it's going to look absolutely phenomenal on TV. And the course is in not good shape. I personally think, being that it's going to be a little soft because we're going to get a little weather on Friday and Saturday, the wind isn't supposed to go completely crazy. So I think if somebody gets hot weather driver, like a Rory McIlroy or even a Patrick Reed, Patrick Reed's a good – if you want a sleeper pick, there's your sleeper pick. If he can – the way that he hits that ball, he's got a consistent curve with his draw on the off the tee, that can help him tremendously. And he generates a lot of spin into the greens too, so he can kind of control his ball into the green. That's Hooli, that's not a bad pick.
Hooli, I want to know the what do you think the cut line is going to be?
Cut line is going to be extremely high because I keep talking about these 30 guys that can hit it like 320, 330. They can hit it all past the trouble. The cut line is going to be traditional because the traditional problems with this is that you hit it in the rough, you have a 6-iron, you hit your 6-iron up somewhere near the green in a bunker, you hit a decent shot to about 6-8 feet, and everybody misses the putts because the shorter putts are very, very difficult to read. And they're designed to look like it goes like a left edge putt, looks like a right edge putt. So I think the cut's going to be at least 150, at least.
Wow.
Good chance somebody doesn't break 90 it's going to be very difficult.
Hooli, I'm really curious here. You know, again, I mean, you know, you just share with us how long you've been at Wingfoot. It's evident. Mm-hmm. I've played that course with you at least what 4 or 5 times, and
yeah,
as you as you know, my caddy.
Yes.
And like if I understand in the tour, you've got your caddy. You know, he's your partner, but a course like this, greens like this, I just feel it would be a tremendous advantage to have you on my bag because nobody knows these greens like you do, Hooli. Have you ever been asked to caddy for?
Over the last couple of years, there's been guys coming around that planned on trying to qualify for it. So I've given my number in the last 3 or 4 years, probably to about 20 to 25 guys that had intentions of trying to qualify. But due to the COVID, they couldn't. But no, not by a tour pro, no. And I did have the pleasure of meeting Patrick Reed's caddy the other day over at Saxon Woods, which is the local course right up the street from Wingfoot. He just came over to hit balls on the range, and I was talking to him, and I was like, I told him, I said, you know, like, I don't know if you – I am a bit of a golf junkie, so I kind of know all the ins and outs of what all these guys do. And Patrick Reed's caddy literally gets down on his chest, and he lies down on the ground, like, you know, like a down push-up position to read putts. And I told him, you should probably lean on that because if you can get down that low, you literally can see the breaks that nobody else can see. And there's going to be very, very tricky spots. So I told him to lean on that. I also told him that if he wanted to play 9 holes and he brought over his book, that I'd be more than happy to explain how each green works and this and the ins and outs of it, which he never showed up. So he's on his own with that one. But it's not a golf course. Yeah, you're right. A local guy would be a tremendous asset out there because it's not a place that you can figure out in a year. It takes a long, long, long time. You can get a couple of reads right here or there, but you're just – the greens are going to – in 06, I tried to tell everybody this in 06. They're not going to make any putts, and they didn't. You walked around the place, and it was quiet. There's no roars like Augusta because nobody's knocking in anything. You have to be inside of 10 feet. And then they're tricky from there as well because they're not putting – like you had even when you played there, we were playing the Monday pins. They're not getting the Monday pins for this, so it's going to be very, very difficult.
So, hey, what do you think? How Danny Noonan is going to do? Because I heard he's caddying out there for one of the club pros. Is that true?
He's caddying for Danny Balin, who is a very, very good club pro around here. I forget which course he's at. He is a very, very good player, and he caddied for him in a couple of practice rounds. He's not going to be with
awesome.
Him. On the tournament. His brother was the Wingfoot club president for 2 years, going back about 8 years ago. His brother's a member there. And he's one of I don't want to say anything bad about any other members, but he's one of the best players. He's one of my favorites.
That'll be fun to watch.
Hooli, before I let you go, from what I understand, Tiger's been out there a few times. Give us your thoughts. Tiger to miss the cut is plus 170. I'm probably going to throw some coin on that. Based on what you've heard or what you've seen, how do you expect Tiger to do this week?
He hasn't made the cut. He doesn't traditionally do well in like here or Westchester. What does that mean? That is he like they're trying to say he's gonna miss the cut? I don't know how the whole gambling thing.
No, works. you can wager that he's not gonna make the cut at plus 170. So if I lay $100 down and he doesn't make the cut, I win $170.
That's kind of scary. I don't know if I would do that. He is still pretty good, and he does hit it a long way. He's kind of one of the guys that I would put into that 30. Like, I really only think that about 30 players have a legit chance to win. I think everybody else is playing for a top 10, to be totally honest with you. You can't get it out there over 300. And in the air, if you can get it out there 300 in the air, I think you have a pretty good chance. If you don't, it's really – the odds are stacked against you. But I honestly think – yeah. In fact, the green superintendent, Steve Rabideau, it's almost like he's going after Tiger because he doesn't think Tiger's going to make the cut either. I personally think he's got to make the cut and top 30 or something like that because he just putts too well. And the greens are going to be lightning fast. Last time he had a very difficult time there, but he had a very difficult time on the greens. And I actually had the opportunity to follow him around with the job that I had the last time, and I watched him on the greens. And it was the greens that gave him fits. They don't make any sense. They wouldn't make any sense to you. The second, the fourth hole is a very difficult green to read. As far as these guys hit it, like the top 30 guys, again, they can hit it down there close and you got a wedge in your hand. You can take the difficulty of the green away if you hit it inside of 6 feet or 8 feet with a wedge. Eight, another very, very difficult green that just doesn't make much sense to it. Because the eighth hole is extremely fast from front right to back left, but it looks like it's uphill the whole way. So you sit there and you swear the thing's uphill, you hit it just a little bit firm, and you can run it 10, 12, 14, 15 feet by. There's other holes where you're going to have – I know where they're putting almost every single pin. I don't know which day they're going to put them there, but I know every pin placement on every green that they're going to use pretty much. You're going to see guys hitting putts off of greens. At 13, it's going to be crazy, absolutely crazy.
So again, so really quick, the tee times came out. So on Thursday, yeah. Tiger is paired up with Morikawa and JT on Thursday at 8 a.m. Rory, Adam Scott, and Justin Rose are at 8 a.m. They start off on the 10th hole.
Okay. When do you see 10? 10's insane. They moved the tee box all the way back behind the cart path, which they've been talking about doing because that hole's designed to catch. I was out there with Billy Haas one day from the Blue Tees, and he pulled out an 8-iron, and I was like, Billy, that's not going to get it done. And he just looked at me with a little smirk on his face, and he goes, oh, yeah? Watch this. And he got it done. But that hole was not designed for that. You're supposed to be hitting 3s, 4s, and 5s off of that tee, and they moved it back to where these guys are now going to have to hit 3s, 4s, and 5s again. But they're not used to hitting it into greens like that anymore.
But follow me here, Sean.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Because you could wager on who's going to be at the top of the leaderboard after round one. So should I eye the guys that are going to be teeing off in the afternoon because the greens aren't going to be as fast in the afternoon as in the morning on Thursday?
Yes, absolutely. Because they're still going to be fast enough to where – you know, if they're going to get them to 13-5, that means they're going to probably double cut, double roll. So, and most of these guys aren't wearing nails anymore. So there's not going to be spike marks anywhere. I would definitely pick somebody in the afternoon. And then if you're going to pick a low round, pick low rounds in the afternoons. I'd leave the morning guys alone because for two reasons. One, the greens are going to slow down a little bit. And as thick as that rough is, if it gets a little bit of moisture in there,
I mean, you know, like even I was telling you, if you cut across it a little bit, you play it back on your stance, you hit it low, and you chase it into all the greens, that shot's available for you. And it's kind of, there's not a whole lot of other shots that you can really play. But when it's wet, it's a wrap. You're chipping out at best. And if you try to, this is where if you try to do anything special when it's wet like that, you're begging for doubles. It's not going to go well. You're begging for doubles, especially on the first hole of the dogleg right, where everybody is going to be, a lot of guys are going to be hitting it through the fairway. It's a dogleg right where the whole fairway where these guys can hit it to pitches to the right. So you're going to see a lot of guys in the right rough. And when it's wet, it's going to really give the problems that the press is talking about. The press is really talking about how it's impossible to get it out of the rough. These are the best players in the world. They have a pretty good idea how to get it out of the rough. They're just that good. And they're going to realize if you just, there's nothing in front of the greens anymore. So if you chase it in there, they may not be able to make a birdie, but especially these longer guys are going to be able to get it out of the rough. They're going to be able to get it out of the green, and they may not make a birdie, but they're going to be able to make pars more so than the last tournament where a lot of guys were hitting six irons. Even the longer guys were hitting six and sevens out of it. And that creates a whole new element of problems.
Thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate it. Such great insight.
Anytime you want him.
I definitely know where I'm going to put my money. So.
Yes, put it in the afternoon, guys.
This guy is
going to make a cut. Come on, he's the best player to ever tee it up.
Not if you're, you know, greens guy is trying to, you know, engineer it where he does it. You just gave us a little nugget.
There's not a lot you can do about it. He can only set it up. If he's going to go after,
I love that nugget.
If he's going to go after Tiger Woods, what's going to happen to Zach Johnson? And I love Zach Johnson. But if you make it hard for a guy that can hit it that far, that straight, and putt that well, what are you going to do with the guys that can still only hit it 280 and maybe they won't have the putter that they used to have?
Julie, I gotta let you go, but we appreciate your time, and I'll see you on Friday.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
Christina, thanks a lot. John, have a good one.
Fantastic. Julie, caddy at Wingfoot. So guys, I don't know about you. I'm walking away with, I'm putting money on the afternoon tea times on Thursday. I'm putting money on the guys who can draw the ball the best.
I don't know where I'm putting money anymore. I got so many crazy things going on now. I'm writing I got five pieces of paper in front of me. I'm writing down this, that, the other thing. I'm hitting cut shots out of the rough. I can't wait for this tournament. Oh my gosh.
I took a ton of notes. All right, guys. John, let's start with you. You know, I don't think that Tiger is going to make the cut. So I will lay the coin that he's going to miss the cut at +170.
I agree with you. I don't think he's making the cut either. Christina? I usually love to disagree with you. That's kind of my thing.
I know.
I'm going to agree with you on this one.
Christina, you think he makes or misses the cut, Tiger?
Yeah, I hate this question. I feel like I want him to make the cut. I want him, and I believe that he won't. But he's making the cut. No, he's making. I'm putting it. He'll make the cut. Maybe at the very bottom of the cut. Maybe on the number. But he'll be playing on the weekend.
Okay,
that's my.
So John and I say no. Christina says yes. Guys, did you hear about this bet that was placed at William Hill?
Oh, is this the Phil Mickelson bet?
Yeah, somebody laid listen to this, Christina. Somebody laid $45,000 down that Phil Mickelson's going to win this tournament 75-1. If Phil wins, this dude wins $3.375 million.
Stop.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yep.
Who has 45 grand just to throw it on Phil on a long shot?
Phil Mickelson.
Listen, Phil's teeing it up in the morning.
Oh, look at you. You're already looking at tea times, aren't you?
I'm looking at tea times.
Phil's going to get up. Phil's going to get up. He's going to have himself some coffee for wellness.
You little degenerate. I love it.
He's going to go out and shoot 77.
We mentioned the tea times with Julie just a second ago. So Tiger's going to be teeing up with Morikawa and JT. That's a Thursday AMT time. Rory, Adam Scott, and Justin Rose, they're around 8 a.m. on Thursday, but they start off on hole number 10. Spieth, Patrick Reed, seems like Cooley really likes Patrick Reed, right? You mentioned him like 15 times.
Yeah, that makes three yeah. people in the country that like him.
Yeah, right?
Including his wife.
Ow! Spieth, Patrick Reed, and Decky, their morning tea time as well. But here's DJ, Dustin Johnson, DeChambeau, and Finau, 1:15 p.m. They've got that afternoon tea time on Thursday. I might throw some coin that DJ's at the top leaderboard after round one. What do you guys think?
Really? You're really going out on a limb there, Anita. It's of course.
I said when we opened up the podcast, I said I'm going chalk.
It's
I don't
so
normally...
easy to pick him. He's like the best in the world, and his game is so complete. You know, the driver.
Yeah, I'm not picking him.
Plus, now Koepka is out, yeah. So is that like extra motivation for DJ to win? I don't know.
So just to kind of
get I don't know. I like DJ, but
so who do you have winning?
Go ahead, Christina. I have the winner, so
I'm going with Morikawa.
You're going more.
Oh, you have the winner, John? You have the
winner.
I know
the winner. So you guys just talk amongst yourselves.
Who's your winner, John?
I'm over here talking.
Who's your winner, John?
It's real. Like I said, it's really easy to pick DJ.
Mm-hmm.
JT is heating up at the right moment. You know, Wingfoot demands consistency, being accurate. We know how he hits the ball a long way.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be in the hunt. But my pick.
Okay.
Xander Schauffele. Last three opens, fifth, sixth, and third. He is due a terrific driver of the ball. More important, a fantastic putter. Xander Schauffele, -4, 2020 U.S. Open champion. Lock it in. Throw the key away.
Final answer.
Get yourself a nice cold one and make money.
Just to give you the lines on that. So again, I have Dustin Johnson winning it. That's at +850. John Rahm to win it is +900. Justin Thomas, you mentioned him, is 14-1. Your Schauffele is 15-1, John, by the way. Christina, your Morikawa is 17-1 to win it. Some guys that I like to finish in the top five. I think Daniel Berger has a good shot of finishing the top five. He's 6-1. Hooley mentioned Patrick Reed. He's +550 to finish in the top five. So
how about Webb Simpson?
I'm not.
Don't talk about Webb, huh?
Webb Simpson, 25-1 to win, +550 to finish in the top five, +250 to finish in the top 10.
Huh.
Find some money in your sock drawer and throw it on Webb Simpson if you're listening.
Rory is 18-1 to win, +400, 4-1 to finish in the top five, and 2-1 to finish in the top 10.
Not odds aren't good enough, if you ask me.
Figure he just came off. He's new daddy.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's
got to buy a lot of diapers.
Yeah, I think he's
got a lot of diapers.
Hey, he's in baby mode.
Let's end our U.S. Open talk on this, because there's a bunch of matchups that you could wager on. Okay. So DJ against Rahm, who are you taking?
DJ.
Okay, -115. Justin Thomas against Schauffele. Get this, John. You could get Schauffele at +100, and all he has to do is beat JT. That's it.
That's it.
And you win.
Got it in my pocket right now. Come on.
There you go. Webb Simpson against Rory. Webb Simpson.
Webb.
All he has to do is beat Rory. It's +100.
Hmm.
Love that.
Here you go, Christina. Morikawa against DeChambeau. How do you guys think DeChambeau is going to do?
Listen, he's going to swing out of his shoes. I mean, that's all he does.
I'm giving it two thumbs down.
I was just going to say, John, it's a podcast. People can't see your thumbs.
I know, but I just love giving it two thumbs down. You can hear my thumbs just going in a downward motion right now.
So Morikawa -125 to finish better than DeChambeau. How about this is like a lot of people like Fitzpatrick. Matthew Fitzpatrick over Justin Rose, -106.
Interesting. I don't know much about the player, to be honest. But I hear his name a lot, and people love him. I think he's got a good game. So, okay.
Last one I want to tee up for you, John, and I'm assuming you've heard of him. Will Zalatoris? Zalatoris? He's on the – what?
Yeah, no, you're right on. Listen, he's
He's the number one, tenth, right? He's the number one player on the
Korn Ferry.
Korn Ferry.
Yep. What's his number?
Apparently, the reason that he doesn't have his tour card is because of COVID. He couldn't get it because of COVID.
Yes.
But
what? Does he have some ridiculous number like 8,000 or something like that?
What, to win?
Yes.
To win? Hold on. I'll look right now. But I'll tell you what. I'm playing this cat. I keep on reading about this guy. I'm going to play him to finish top 10, top 40, top 30, top 20, top 10, top 5. I'm going to put a lot of money on this cat.
You know what? I think it's so good to see some of these players that aren't usually in the spotlight to perform really well at these U.S. Opens. So, I think it's super cool to have someone like that to root for.
What do you know about this guy?
So he's been on the Korn Ferry Tour. He has a win on the Korn Ferry Tour. He hasn't played in any PGA Tour events this year. He's got 9 top 10s in 16 events on the Korn Ferry Tour. A win and 9 top 10s in 16 events.
So he's 160 to 1 to win.
Fantastic iron player, by the way.
He's 33 to 1 to finish in the top 5, and he's 12 to 1 to finish in the top 10. I'm laying all that on this kid. Zalatoris.
Yep.
Will Zalatoris. That's our sleeper. All right, Christina Thompson, golf for her. She's all over the LPGA tour. Let's end on this. Any update in regard to what's going on the ladies tour, Christina?
Yeah. So last week we had another major event on the LPGA tour. It was the ANA Inspiration. Dinah Shore is played out in Rancho Mirage. Great tournament. Another great performance by these ladies. It came down to a 3-way playoff between Miriam Lee from South Korea, Nelly Korda, Brooke Henderson, but Miriam, you know, she put herself in good position all weekend and found herself with, you know, a 5-foot putt to find herself her first major win. She hasn't won a tour event since 2017. So it's an exciting tournament. Bummer not to see the fans, but she did get to take that leap into Poppy's Pond with her caddy that anyone who watches at the LPGA wants to take the leap in there. So she got to do it without a gallery, but it was a great tournament even without the crowd. This week, the ladies are actually in Portland and for the Cambia Portland Classic. Now, due to the hazard air quality out there in the Pacific Northwest, this tournament actually was reduced down to 54 holes. So, dealing with some poor air quality out there. So should be a great event. It's a great stop on the tour. Marina Alex is not playing in the event. She was a previous winner of this 2 years ago, but she's sitting this one out. So anyway, great event. Hope they have great weather out there and hope the skies clear up and everyone's safe out there.
Christina, you didn't talk anything about the big blue wall.
I'm not talking about the big blue wall because it was extremely irritating to see the backstop, the great wall of Dinah, as they were calling it.
It's like the green monster in front of a water hazard.
I have strong feelings about this personally.
Listen, I think it's ridiculous and I think it's unfair, to be completely
well,
honest.
Well, listen, that's normally a gallery. So there's usually a giant gallery there. The fact that there was no gallery there, they did not need to put that wall there. The players were using it as a backstop. The hole is a stunning hole. If you've ever been to that golf course, I mean, it is a beautiful hole. So to stick anything there, you know, is just an unfortunate situation. But yeah, so the players, it caused a lot of controversy, you know, about it being there. So the players, I mean, there was balls that were getting stuck under it and bouncing off of it, and players, you know, anyway, I'm just trying to move on from this
until the next time.
All right, John, final thoughts before we sign off.
It is a pleasure being back on the podcast with the both of you. I missed you. And it's good to see that, Anita, you're still playing golf every day. So good with that.
Not every day. I'm playing tomorrow. I'm playing Rivervale Country Club tomorrow. I'm playing Spook awesome. Rock on Friday. I played Galloping Hill on Monday. I'm great. Trying.
So listen, everyone so that's who listens knows. Every day. Well, listen, everyone knows that, in my opinion, and I'm sure you two agree, that this is the best time of year to be playing golf in our area. cool temperatures. The golf courses are nice and firm. They're in great shape.
The best golf clothes are fall golf clothes.
Yes. So keep playing golf if you're listening to us. Get out there, play your golf courses, support the support these places. You know, it's been a crazy year, and all the owners and all the members and all the people who play public course and all the courses in our area are really going to benefit from a great fall. So get out there and keep playing until it starts snowing, and then just play nine.
Well said, John Mascari. Christina Thompson, golf for her. She said nothing like fall golf clothes. So check out her website. And if you're in Denville, check out her store as well, Golf for Her. Guys, enjoy Thursday through Sunday. It's going to be an absolute blast. And when Dustin Johnson wins, I expect a text saying, Anita, you were right again.
Look how she threw again in there.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys. Always a pleasure. Love you guys.
Love you too.
Everybody, enjoy the tournament, and we'll be back with another podcast soon here on 98.7 ESPN.